My pleasure. Big hug to all of you guys. And thank you. Thank you. I'm so pleased. Thank you.
Okay. We also want to thank Suzanne Thompson for her help with this segment. We're out of time. I'd like to thank all of today's guests. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Sojourner Truth will be back on the show tomorrow. I'd also like to thank our team today, our board op, Gary Baca, our assistant producer, Romero Funes, today's show produced by myself, Margaret Prescott. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland, and here's the lineup for the rest of the morning. Press Watch in just a couple of minutes. Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fogering welcomes journalist Joe Loria from ConsortiumNews.com, who says that the U.S. media is clinging to hopes of Russian collusion. At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, Lisa Loving welcomes back Gregory Pardlow to talk about his new book, Air Traffic. At 11:30, Black Book Talk welcomes librarian Patricia Hurd Hobson to discuss the best books they've ever read. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm, click on donate. It's 9:01. Press Watch is next.
I'm 50 years old.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO. There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras. So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, wildfires are continuing to rage across California and Washington and Oregon. The current drought is the worst the state has seen since 2015. Oregon wildfires, according to the Statesman Journal, have burned 291,000 acres as of the end of last month, more than double last year's record-setting fire season at the same time. So, climate change is raging rapid, and catastrophic climate change is burning the planet up. And I thought I'd start with that, doubling down on Democracy Now. And you can pull up the Democracy Now! Broadcast at democracynow.org, or you can listen to it again on KBOO at 4 p.m. today. A very significant issue. Let's get right down to This Week in Whiteness, article by Sam Fulward III. In thinkprogress.org says, Black Lives Matter activists in Memphis, Tennessee learned last week that they'd made some new friends on Facebook, local law enforcement. The discovery occurred in a very roundabout way. In response to a lawsuit brought by the ACLU in Tennessee, which alleges that the Memphis Police Department have violated a 1978 consent decree promising not to spy on local political activists, Memphis city officials released a cache of previously sealed documents. Within that document dump of more than 300 pages of court filings and depositions was an interesting disclosure, an admission that the cops used a fake Facebook profile deployed in 2016 and 17 to monitor surreptitiously Black Lives Matter activists. The materials released by city officials painted a detailed, if reluctant, portrait of how the Memphis police, under the direction of the Office of Homeland Security, a special team created after the September 11, 2001 attacks, used social media platforms to spy on Black Lives Matter activists. The recent surveillance program started in reaction to large protests against police shootings across the country and, in particular, to BLM-led demonstrations following the 2015 Memphis police shooting of 19-year-old Darius Stewart. Among the pages of court filings and depositions in the ACLU case, police officials acknowledge creating an internal PowerPoint slideshow titled Blue Suede Shoes that cataloged the names and faces of Black Lives Matter activists who participated or were arrested in connection with protests following Stewart's death. I want to emphasize that word participated. Because when I'm reading this, I'm thinking of the Portland Red Squad, and I'm thinking about so many things going back to COINTELPRO and extending, you better believe it, right up to the artificial intelligence prediction programs of the present day, which are monitoring your every move. In one of the depositions, Officer Timothy Reynolds admitted that the police used a fake Facebook profile for Bob Smith in order to befriend and monitor activists whose activities were subsequently reported to police officials. Information gathered by Bob Smith was used to track Black Lives Matter activists, their social media contacts, and in one case, an activist's spouse. City officials strongly defended its activities in a statement. They don't see anything wrong with it. Going back to the text, this week's disclosure of a Memphis Police Department social media skullduggery, first reported by George Joseph of The Appeal, an online publication that specializes in legal and criminal justice news, comes as a shocking reminder of past misdeeds in Memphis, where city officials agreed 40 years ago to stop the clandestine tracking of civil rights activists. However, today, city leaders see no contradiction between its history of illegal spying and its contemporary use of social media to collect information on individuals or groups that police deem a threat to public safety. So there's more on that article, and you can find it at thinkprogress.org. But there's more in that line. And I want to report this. There's an obvious push across the nation, all the way to the Washington Post on the East Coast, to present this story as a justified shooting, but I encourage you to look at the video. So I'm going to alter local news and give you this story this way. Dateline Washington State. An unarmed black man was shot dead by a Montgomery County police officer in June. No reason was given. The Montgomery County Police Department has released video and testimony in the investigation of the fatal shooting of Mr. White by Officer Anand Badjigar in a Silver Springs parking lot June 11th. Badjigar was cleared of any criminal wrongdoing Monday. Surprise! Montgomery County had turned the evidence over to the Howard County State's Attorney's Office so as to ensure an independent review. Badjigar's lawyer told Howard County State's Attorney Dario Broccolino that Begajar was driving on Sligo Creek Parkway past Three Oaks Drive, a dead-end road, when he saw White walking north away from him on Three Oaks Drive. Begajar said White stared at Begajar's police car as it went past, and that was his final and fatal mistake. In the video, Begajar is seen following Mr. White around and appears at one point to pepper spray White. The video shows Begajar heading back to his car and opening the door, as White approaches him in a wild and final act of defiance against the cop who drew a gun on him for no reason. White yells, "Do it!" in the video and punches and struggles for the gun. Bagajar then shoots White several times, including after White is lying in the parking lot. Bagajar is under internal investigation by the Montgomery County Police. Now, I didn't clean up all of that article. You can hear some of the bias, but I encourage you to go onto YouTube and put in the word Badjigar, B-A-D-G-U-J-A-R, B-A-D-G-U-J-A-R, and make your own conclusions. And what I concluded is, I respect Mr. White, and I thank him for his brave and fatal and final act of defiance. I've been in that box. In 1980, in Texas, when I was a defiant lefty and I criticized a cop loudly for being a butt, she called the entire University of Texas Police Department on me with an all-points bulletin because I was riding a bicycle on a sidewalk. I ended up looking down the barrels of those guns, and they considered it for a minute. They made their little decision, and their decision was, it's on a bicycle, it's white, but it has a beard. It looks weird. But they didn't kill it. They didn't kill it because it was white, and it was me. It's happened to me again in a TriMet office where I was cornered by a cop who's determined to get revenge on me for closing a door on his face and demanding a warrant for his rage-filled investigation of me yelling at a business owner. That cop had written to another cop, "Let's take down a tranny," or words to that effect. And they pounced on me. But again, I didn't die. But I know a little bit of what it's like in this society. Not the extent, just a little bit. I drive around, people don't know I'm trans. And so I've got that. But I respect Mr. White and his act of defiance, and I thank him. And I feel it. I feel it. I thank him because every act of defiance has an account. Every act of defiance has its effect. And the appropriate way, the appropriate and the only correct emotion for any person of color facing cops is rage. Sorry, cops. That's the way it is. And, you know, the cops have made this happen. And this is the society we live in which a cop can drive around, as you can see in the video, and they can call on you, and they can tell you to get on your face. And if you don't, they can shoot you and get away with it. Now, I remember watching a movie in 1980. It was 80 or 81, and it was it had James Wood, and it had Belushi's brother. And I think it was called Salvador. And in the movie, there is this horror scene where James Wood's character is telling the other character, no matter what they say in a confrontation with the police, with the soldiers, don't get on your face, because that's what the Salvadoran soldiers are telling him. Get down on the ground. Don't get on the ground, he says. And I thought, you know, what a horror to live in a police state like that, to live in a monster state where someone with a gun and a uniform and a badge can just tell you to get down and kill you when they feel like it and get away with it. That's where we live right now. Salvador had an armed revolutionary faction. We don't. But the reason they had an armed revolutionary faction is because conditions were intolerable, absolutely intolerable for any human being, and that is where we live today. And that's our This Week in Whiteness. Now I want to go to some other news items for this press watch. News you're not supposed to know on KBOO Portland. North and South Korea held military talks to build trust on Tuesday while the United States detected renewed activity at a North Korean missile factory. That's from South China Morning Post. And the meeting, they write, their second since June, held in the border village of Panmunjom in the demilitarized zone, was designed to follow on from an inter-Korean summit in April at which leaders of the two Koreas agreed to defuse tensions and halt all hostile acts. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un also vowed during his separate summit with U.S. President Donald Trump in Singapore in June to work towards denuclearization, but there has not been a concrete agreement to accomplish that goal. This is the difference, oh, by the way, in reading foreign press and reading the U.S. press. It's a non-agreement, basically. It's an agreement to settle down a bit. Trump is going on around claiming that it's an agreement for them to scrap all their nukes. They never said that. They never meant that. And as I have warned, you'll be hearing more about this because that will be the excuse. That will be the propaganda to go to war with North Korea eventually. South Korea's defense ministry said last week it plans to reduce guard posts and equipment along the heavily fortified border as an initial step to implement the agreement. And Ahn Ik-son, the general leading the North Korean delegation in military talks, noted South Korean press reports suggesting he might try to persuade the South to push for a joint declaration with the U.S. to formally end the war. And the war is, of course, still going on. There's much more of that article. It's at scmp.com. Today, there's a planned anti-violence march on the north side of Chicago. And the organizers are saying they may shut down all lanes of Lakeshore Drive. Originally, the plan was to shut down a stretch of northbound lanes at the start of the evening rush hour. This is according to the Chicago Tribune, an article by Elvia Maligan. But on Wednesday, one of the lead organizers, T.O. Hardiman, said they now plan to march on the southbound lanes of Lakeshore Drive, and there's a possibility protesters will spill onto the northbound lanes before continuing to march to Wrigley Field. And while one lead organizer says the group has no plans to enter the ballpark, another organizer has been coy about their exact plans. Reverend Gregory Livingston, one of the organizers, was quoted by the Tribune saying, "Play ball, it's still in the air." Chicago police said Wednesday afternoon the altered plans wouldn't change their approach and that lane closures in the area would probably start about 3:45 p.m. Let's see, that would be noon 45 here on the West Coast. On Tuesday, police said they didn't intend to stand in the way of the protest as long as it remains peaceful. And there's more on that at the Chicago Tribune. Now from local media and also from the Hate Watch group, Southern Poverty Law, the far-right groups, Idiot Prayer and the Proud Boys will converge on, I'm sorry, it's Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys will converge on Portland in a matter of days, but Patriot Prayer leader Joey Gibson and his followers were apparently unable to wait until his weekend to harass the city's residents and provoke left-wing activists. Let's see, Rachel Janik is writing in KOIN, the two groups have momentum from their last violent outing in Portland, a rally on June 30th that quickly became an all-out melee between right-wing rally-goers and anti-fascist counter-protesters. Gibson has said attendees plan to bring guns and other weapons to the city for an upcoming August 4th rally. I'm sorry, I just made a mistake. This is not the KOIN script. This is Southern Poverty Law's script. So, sorry about that. In 2018, they write, the Southern Poverty Law Center named the Proud Boys a hate group because of its members' ties to the racist right, their rhetoric denigrating Muslims and women, and the group's affiliation with events featuring right-wing extremists. Now, I want to speak for myself on this issue. One of the big things that is brought up and is constantly repeated is the idea that this is an act of free speech. It most certainly is not. The phrase is, a far-right extremist group, styled as a men's drinking club, will provide armed security for the event. Armed security for an event that they are bringing, a fight that Joey Gibson has promoted, and he has said that he expects to get slack from the Portland police and allow him, essentially, to beat up leftists and anyone who opposes him. This is not an act of free speech. This is an act of armed intimidation. Let me explain. Threats and armed intimidation were never free speech. If ISIS and Al-Qaeda were to form a group and march into Portland with muscly thugs and guns, it would not be treated as free speech. Because the American society, the U.S. society, universally recognizes that ISIS and Al-Qaeda are armed death squads. And the Nazis and the Klan affiliated, whether the Proud Boys and the alt-right want to admit it or not publicly, these are blooded death squads. The reason people say that they are Nazis, or the reason that they say they are Klan, is to have that feeling of power, that act of intimidation. I probably don't need to tell you that there's a long history of death and destruction associated with the Klan and the Nazis. And when a group allows affiliation with the Klan and the Nazis, then they are joining in that, of course. They're joining in that intimidation. So, if I were to go on the street corner and look at a cop and yell at him that I was going to kill him, that would not be treated as free speech. Oh, no. I'd be drilled for that. You'd better believe it, because it isn't free speech. And because cops are that aggro. So I just want to emphasize this. Don't let anyone tell you that Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys coming to town is free speech. It ain't. I don't care if the guy's running for Senate. So what? He comes here looking for a fight openly, siding with the Portland police, which is even worse. And he intends for blood to flow. And this is promoting Nazi and Klan and white supremacist ideology. This is not free speech. What I'm doing right here, this is free speech. And do I need to explain that? It's free speech because I am not threatening you. And even if I did threaten you, there would be no context for you to be able to believe it as a threat. But if someone were to affiliate themselves, I wouldn't even let someone talk on the air as a Nazi or as someone affiliated with Patriot Prayer or the Proud Boys. The reason being, when you affiliate, everything you say is then a threat. Everything you say is then a threat. Now, I'm not going to say that in all media and everywhere that they should be shut out or that they should shut up. But in the People's Radio Station, KBOO, I wouldn't allow them in the door. Because if they wanted to express their ideas as free speech, they would do it without any affiliation. They would absolutely denounce and exclude Nazis and Klan, as we do here. And that's because we don't threaten people here at KBOO. It's not free speech. If you've been saying that it is free speech, please stop saying that because you're lying. And worse, you're lying on behalf of white violence. So returning to the article, unable to pass up the opportunity to needle their political opponents, Gibson and a herd of supporters traveled to Portland's Occupy ICE camp twice last week to harass activists protesting the Trump administration's child separation immigration policy. He recorded the group's activities on Facebook Live, claiming he just wanted to talk. You know, that free speech lie. Gibson instigated a series of fruitless, sometimes unintelligible exchanges with the demonstrators at the camp. And the article goes into some of the details on that. One of the members of the group posted his incident there and said, "We're coming for you," in a video, in a sing-song voice. "We're going to send you a clear message today. I identify as an MF who's going to punch you in your effing commie mouth," Schultz yells into the camera. That's from the SPLC article. They write, "Gibson does not explain his decision to bring someone with Tuisi's temperament along in pursuit of a peaceful dialogue." Tuisi is who I was just quoting. At the end of that Occupy ICE video, Gibson suggests he fully anticipated Tuisi would become violent, chuckling to the camera that the masked protester got off easy. Quote, "Tiny's gone a long way to hold back for that long. I'm surprised he didn't tear down that whole fence and eat him. Damn, that kid's lucky," end quote. And this is the sort of talk that they use to double down on their intimidation. Active armed intimidation being participated in by the city of Portland police. Some commentators are saying that we are moving along the road swiftly towards full fascism. We are at the stage, just at the edge of the stage, that we can compare to Germany. Don't tell me about Godwin's law. It's gone too far now. We're at the stage in which one can make comparisons to Germany. The communists were organizing in Germany, and the fascists wanted to make them out as monsters, and they constantly picked fights with them. They got their approval and subscription and tolerance from the state and eventually became part of the state until they could wipe out the communists. And eventually they arranged a stunt, a false flag event of the sort Americans are quite familiar with now, in which they had a dim-witted and possibly brain-damaged communist set fire to the Reichstag. And after that they said, well, now it's illegal to be a communist. We're getting close to that. We're a war and a false flag away from full-blown fascism. And I would say think carefully about the optics before you go down to confront the Idiot Prayer Group, excuse me, Patriot Prayer. Time is 9:24. You're listening to Press Watch. The backlash, the attack on transgender people, is increasing. Demagogues like Attorney General Jeff Sessions, backed by fundamentalist TERFs and right-wingers around the world, are pressing forward to deny human rights and to denigrate and degrade the lives of transgender people. The State Department has begun to revoke existing passports of transgender people, citing one excuse or another. Even WPATH, a source for transgender medical information for the entire world, has now accepted infamous anti-trans bigots into its inner circle. I'm talking about people like McHugh. Sensing easy meat, the reactionaries of the world are closing in. Like many transgender people, I am seeing this in my daily life as strangers turn to me to express their rage at my existence. I know of three people who have detransitioned simply due to ongoing social pressure. From MassLive.com, a group of 14 detained transgender asylum seekers were released by immigration officials in New Mexico this week following efforts by the ACLU. ACLU said in a statement that its Immigrant Protection Project organized 18 volunteer lawyers and two local law students in Western Massachusetts who filed petitions with Immigration and Customs Enforcement to demand the release of transgender women seeking asylum. The group of transgender women who traveled to the U.S. border from El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala arrived together, smart move, at the Southern California border at the end of May, according to the ACLU. They're detained at the Cibola County Detention Center in New Mexico. For the last 2 months, legal volunteers defended the group's right to asylum, pointing to the lack of rights for transgender people in their native countries. And there's already been one suicide that we know of. And if you go back to the INS, the predecessor of ICE, they have always been against GLBTQIA persons. And they have always aggressed against them. The head of the Christian Institute, this is from pinknews.com, has claimed that it's sinful to refer to transgender people with the correct pronouns. Colin Hart, the director of the Christian Institute, made the comments in the Evangelical Pressure Group's annual report. He claimed that the biblical teachings require people to intentionally refer to transgender people by the wrong pronoun, though transgender people are not actually mentioned in the Bible. Hart said, parents, even those who are not Christians, are increasingly alarmed by the gender ideology being promoted in schools. Children are being told to treat boys as if they are girls in some cases, end quote. He added, quote, it is not loving for us to give the impression that the Christ we serve is happy with someone living as the opposite sex. Instead, we must call people to repentance, end quote. Of course, he's not talking about love at all, but that's the way it goes with evangelicals and fundamentalists. Transgender women are saying their passports are being retroactively denied. The reasons why are unclear. In two separate viral tweets a month apart, two trans women have come forward about the sudden issues they're having with passport renewal. Some say the paperwork they gave to the government before had always been sufficient, and they were given no warning that new or different documentation would be needed. Late last month, the executive director of Gender Justice League, Danny Askini, said her passport renewal was denied, and the new paperwork requirements were extreme. She was told she'd need to get a judge to unseal child welfare records from her foster care, records that had been sealed for her safety, to verify her gender. Askini said all her paperwork has said female for nearly two decades. Quote, none of my documentation would disclose my trans status. And I'm running out of time, so I'll just say that there are several stories of this nature, and I can add to them personally with the abuse that I suffered from the State Department in attempting to get a passport. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, coming to you on 90.7 FM from our red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hills, and coming to you via KBOO.FM and in that way to all the ships at sea.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series called KBOO at the Clinton, hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, we'll screen the film Undocumented on Thursday, August 9th at 7 p.m. Undocumented is a documentary about a 13-year-old who travels from Colombia to join his parents in America and his life becoming a surgeon. It is a story of struggle, loss, danger, courage, and love. Again, that's a film screening of Undocumented, Thursday, August 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. This is Per Fagrang, and the show is Fight the Empire. And our guest, I believe we have him on the line, is Joe Loria, who's a veteran journalist, and he's now the editor of Consortium News. So, Joe Loria, welcome to